is the budget workshop, Wednesday, February 12th. And we start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Three times today.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, this time, I'm going to ask for public participation. Please state your name and your address, your social security, Visa card number, expiration date.
Richard Barlow, 321 Cherrybrook Road. I understand tonight is the capital budget.
Yes.
And I have some comments on that, but first I'd like to offer a suggestion. Ben Holden recently passed away.
Yes.
Ooh, he did?
Yeah, he did. Oh, you didn't know?
He was active on Parks and Rec and the Energy Committee. And he was a staunch advocate for Dial-A Ride, so I guess I'd kind of ask you, in Ben's memory, maybe to put a couple hundred extra bucks into Dial-A Ride.
There is. It's additional $10,000 in there for transportation.
Okay.
I mean, I'd name it the Ben Holden Fund, but there is some additional money in there.
I just thought, he was an advocate for a long time, and it'd be a nice gesture.
And we support that.
You'd put some in or just designate that when you do it. With respect to the capital budget, I'm here to discuss the money for pavement management. I understand last year, for a number of reasons, probably some of which were associated with the late arrival of town aid road money, that all the pavement management money was not used, and there's some carryover for this year. And as a result, in an attempt to try to minimize the budget increase, the amount of money being put in the pavement management fund is going to be cut. If you go back 12 years ago, the town was paying roughly $200,000 a year for pavement management. The end result is that at that point in time, several years after doing the pavement management study, we came forward and did a $3 million bond project to basically have to pay for the costs of deferred maintenance over probably about a 20-year period. Pavement management study recommends in the range of $700,000 or $800,000 a year. We had never got to that level. It was always my goal to try to increase that amount every year of my $50,000 or $100,000 to get to that level. I think it's a very egregious mistake to this point in time, even though you have carryover money from last year, to diminish the amount of money in that account when in fact you should be putting more money into it. I know you're struggling with the budget, and I guess one of the suggestions I would have would be to not decrease the amount of pavement management, but potentially increase it. But on the other side of the coin, to put less money in for a road salt, which is an annual expense.
I'm sorry, didn't hear you. For what?
Road salt. Road salt account. If you run short on the road salt account, you're always going to go back to the Board of Finance, and you're always going to get that account to be replenished. There's no way they're going to say stop salting the roads in mid-February if you've overspent that account. So on one hand, I would say please don't decrease, and potentially, I think it's very important to increase at a $50,000 or $100,000 a year the amount of money in the pavement management fund. Otherwise, we're going to be forced 10 years down the road to go back and bond it and pay twice for maintenance that we should have been doing. So I just wanted to offer those comments and suggestions, and thank you for your time.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to address the board?
Okay. So I have a little bit of a point of order because I'm a little confused. We handed out and we started the special meeting on the budget workshop.
Yes.
But it looks like that there is look at the agenda for the regular town meeting, it looks like under the old business consideration, what was this?
It is the same. I can explain that. We have the budget workshop that starts at 6 o'clock. If we don't finish everything by 7, then we start the regular meeting. In order to be able to go back and finish those things that we might not have completed under the special meeting, we also put it under the regular meeting. That's why.
You've got an answer. Thank you, sir.
He was a Boy Scout.
Yes.
I don't want to leave anything to chance.
That's right. All right, so at this time, I think it's time to discuss community planning and development.
Yep, the first thing under community planning and development is the building department.
If I may, I was wondering if we could take that out of order. Jerry was hoping to be here, and he was stuck at the counter with a customer.
Sure.
Tim is here for fire marshal's budget, outside of his normal hours, so if you could possibly move that out of order.
All right, absolutely.
Need a motion? I'll make a motion to do that.
Do we need a motion?
I don't think you need a motion.
Community planning and development.
Yeah, it's all under the same.
Actually, if you're looking for fire marshal, it's under public safety. It's the last item under public safety. We discuss it during land use because it's actually incorporated into the land use department as one of the regulatory agencies.
What page is it?
It's on page 79. And it's, for those of you in paper format, it's, you have the fire department, emergency service, which is EMS, then fire marshal is the next. So you're looking at fire marshal. Fire marshal is still at 25 hours a week. It's a part-time position. We also have several deputy fire marshals that we use from time to time. They're individuals that we supported moving forward and becoming fire marshals, and then we use them in the vacant, if the fire marshal's unable to attend or is on vacation or what have you, is vacant from the office, then we'll use one of the deputy fire marshals. We also include 50 hours for call-outs. The fire marshal is frequently called out of bed in the middle of the night if there's a fire or some other incident. And so we put in additional funds to pay him for those additional responsibilities. Other than that, I don't think there, Neil, did you have some comments or?
No, I don't. I think we're making up for the error in what we're being charged for the software program. That's the only other discrepancy. Other than that, unless Tim wants to add something.
The software support? Yeah, okay. Yep. Is there any questions?
Questions?
Just one thing. Do you get your codes now electronically, or do you still get them on paper, by book form?
Some are electric and some are book form. Most of them are electronic.
Right. I know there's new code change this year.
We have some money put aside for that. The common ones we get is like just the like basic books, all the supplemental stuff we use online stuff.
All right, any other questions?
We talked about the cell phone, I think, yesterday. I think you explained that.
Yep. All right, and then thereafter, we'll go to community planning and development. Thanks, Tim. That was tough, huh? Why don't we skip the building official then? You want to do the planning? Okay. So if we skip over to the building official, you come to the category which we call town planner. The town planner department consists of the planner, the zoning enforcement official, or assistant town planner, then also the community development coordinator. All of those are full-time positions. One of the, probably the most significant change within this department is the marketing. We have a marketing line item. It's page 115 for those in the electronic. For those that are paper, it's after Park and Rec, Public Library, all that. Then you get into community planning, and then town planner eventually. So under community planning, the first is the building official, and then there's town planner. And then under town planner again, the most significant change was under marketing. Marketing, it primarily those funds are used by EDA, Economic Development Agency. Traditionally, we funded them at $12,000 a year. And, you know, sometimes we get near the end of the year and we have to figure out something to spend it on. And we did, and it was all good expenditures. This year, they came forward with a number of different initiatives. And the one that seemed to be the priority, and we've discussed it here and jumped out at us, was the marketing website.
Yes.
The one that's modeled after, the one that's used in Washington, Connecticut. The one they have in Washington, Connecticut, is a very superior product. It looks very good. We've also discussed it with the Board of Finance, and they seemed, they didn't take a vote or anything, but they seemed on board with it. And we have, the RFP for that is being worked on now. We just got it back from EDA end of last week, and I'm reviewing it tomorrow, so as I get this done. And so once that goes out, we estimate that it's gonna be, I think their estimate was somewhere between, up to 30, what was it, do you remember what it was a year? Was it 36,000 a year at the high end?
36 was the last one we saw on the high end. There was two different okay. options. That would have been the larger of the two.
So I didn't want to go with the high end, and so I went with 28,000. So that 28,000 that you see in marketing is primarily to support the website. I also think we need to create some incentive for EDA and town officials to try to make sure that the stakeholders also participate in this. It's going to be to the benefit of the Chamber of Commerce, the Main Street Marketing Group, and you know, others out there, including the businesses that are actually promoted within this website.
The arts as well.
Yep, the arts. So we need a way to recoup part of the cost of that website. I think it's important that we fund a good portion of it, that we support it, that we be a lot of the force behind making it work. But at the end of the day, I don't want to pay all of it, and I want to create some incentive for them to work with the stakeholders to bring in some additional money. So there's $28,000 in there. To the extent they need it for the website, that's great. If they bring in other stakeholders who offset some of that cost, then that'll be more funding they'll have for all the things they want to do, like wayfinding signs and other things such as that. So, and the things that they were looking for is outlined in the appendix, so you can see what they were looking for. But other than that, there weren't significant changes. We did increase advertising, and that was based on trend. If you look what we spent over the last 3 years and what we spent to date, it looks like that number was going up. Neil, do you have anything else that you wanted to add?
Yeah, only two things. Just one, the advertising, too, is we are unfortunately having to switch back to the Hartford Current, which is just much more expensive. And I do know there's, again, the organization I'm a part of with the Connecticut Planners, we're lobbying, maybe not the right word, but we're petitioning to get legislation changed about that to see if there's something we can do, because it's a huge driving factor, driving costs for our departments. And we're not seeing the effect of it. We actually did a survey to see across the state through different planning departments saying, you know, you're here, how did you find out about the meeting? And something like 2% actually read the legal notice in the newspaper because the world's changed. So that's something that's outdated that we're working on. And then also we did review the changes to the marketing budget last night, the Economic Development Agency meeting. They were generally pleased with what was put together and submitted. And without argument, the website is the number one driving force in out of all the requests. And they were also making statements to the fact that they do need to get buy-in and participation from the other entities in town who will be benefiting from this. So there is the idea of looking for cooperation and support.
Good. Question?
I see in the write-up we're talking about a zoning and development software package. What is that?
Yeah, that was actually at the very least priority of their request we had looked at. Again, we're trying to be on the cutting edge as far as being development friendly or the path of least resistance for people to bring their development interests to as a community. And that was a program that would basically allow developers anywhere and property owners of any nature to actually get on the town website and actually look at their property interactively through the zoning. You could actually experience and figure out what you can and can't do with your property under the zoning code in a graphical representation. It's really neat, very costly. This is just an introductory price and it escalates from here, but it's something we're looking at. And I think it would be something we might bring back in the future as an additional consideration, but at this point in time, the marketing website is by far a much stronger party, and the zoning law itself is a far much less.
One of the reasons I ask is I've seen now this is like the third instance of a geographical information system that we're trying to put together in a small town like Kent. We've got our GIS map on our website. The fire department just bought, buying our GIS license, and now this looks like another equivalent, not strike equivalent, another geographic information system on there. It is there. I know that those base engines on each of those, based on my prior work, is very expensive to buy the base engine. Is there some thought or idea about maybe a common engine to save money?
Well, I think we're doing that already to some
extent. Yeah, I was just going to say.
We basically funded the GIS system, which is the base system that many of these other programs work off of. And now we have the MISTI online permitting software, which uses a GIS as the base platform.
Okay.
And this would also build.
Yeah, the fire department will be using the town GIS. It's not like they're out creating their own GIS.
Yeah.
In order for them to be able to use our GIS, we have to get them a license so they can put it on their computer. That gives them the ability to put data in and to manipulate it and change it, which is what they want to do. And so they'll be using our GIS platform. It's just they'll be able to put their data in it from, you know, their computer. So it's our engine. There's only one engine.
We're actually getting extended benefit from that initial investment, actually.
Well, that was where I was hoping we would go. Because I've seen people try to competing systems spend a lot of money. Not be able to exchange information.
Right.
Okay. Let's see. I was looking down under the software support funds, UNICE, the online permitting position. It said that that is online already, isn't it? Because it said it was supposed to be online at the end of last year. So that is already.
It is.
Yep.
It's yep. Okay. It's up and operating.
And then, since I'm on a roll here down under the mapping line here, it says that that the funds that are cited in here are for part of the cost of maintaining the town's GIS electronic map. Who pays the other part?
There are two parts to that. Half of it is in land use. The other half is in the assessor's office. We use GIS and we update all the street cards, and we there's a map change, like a subdivision comes in. We have to update the map. The cost of that comes out of the assessor's office.
Okay.
The cost of actually maintaining our GIS system so that it's on our webpage and available to the public and is user friendly, that is what is in the land use budget. So we separate those two costs out.
But we really only have one administrator for it. I mean, like GIS, you don't have multiple GIS administrators, do we?
Multiple users, but.
I mean, you got to realize, too, like the geographic information system is a graphical representation of the assessor's database. So if a lot line revision comes through land use, a deed is filed and changes and goes to the assessor database, gets updated in a cell that then gets represented eventually black all the way around. So it transcends, you know, multiple departments, and most all departments use the system, you know, routinely just in the web interface.
And it's the same company.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's two separate companies. We just divide the costs up because both entities use it.
Having 25 years ago gone down the wrong path, I don't want us to go down the wrong path. Don't want you to follow. We don't either. Okay. So then the one last thing I see on that thing about the copier lease, we said this is for the main copier in the town hall.
It is.
I thought there is a big number in the town clerk's thing. That's for her.
Yeah, the town clerk has a smaller copier, and they have a copier there that's for the public, so when they're making copies of deeds and things, they can make copies. The main copier for town hall is located outside the land use office, and it is a very large machine, does color, Corley, all those kind of things, staples. Yeah, that's everything. The half a tree I gave you tonight came off that copier. And that's the one that's used by all the offices. So. You know, we've put it in the land use, made Neil pay for it, but it's essentially the copier that's used by all of town hall.
Do you think that's more appropriate to be administration?
We've heard that. I don't want to get into that. Okay, good. Thank you.
Anyone else? Does anyone else have questions for Neil?
Thank you. I guess, Jerry, it must be stuck, so.
Yeah, that's fine. We have time to get to WPCA afterwards, so. Actually, do you have anything to bring up under building? I mean, it's same.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah. He's still working at the same amount of hours. It's supposed to 22 hours a week. You know, he's getting the inspections done. Reference and text went up a little bit because I think it was every other year we have to buy the new codes or something along those lines, and this happens to be a year we have to buy new codes.
He does like paper.
So, yeah, he does. Yeah, that's true. So that's why there's an increase in reference and text. And other than that, as you can see, everything's pretty much so flat.
And just say, you know, for 22 hours a week, he's doing a pretty large volume for the town and doing a good job of it. We did just about 1,200 permits last year, and we're about 751 as of today and this year. So, you know, there's a lot of activity going on.
That online system should be making it easier for the town employees, right?
It's a change that we're all getting used to. Yep, but one day that will be correct, yes. We're just getting.
It also makes it easier for the public.
Yeah.
Because the public can, you know, from home, actually put in a request a building application, inspections, and all those things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one hope is where before, maybe they didn't want to trudge downtown hall to put in, illegally put that tool shed in the back. Now they'll go forward and actually go through and get the permit. And so, you know, even though it may be easier for them to get the permit, we still need the building official to go ahead and do the inspection. So there's still a lot of work for the building official. And if.
Fire permits can go on that? Burning permits, are you eventually on that?
They're not at the moment, are they?
Not at the moment. I think eventually we can get them.
Well, they're online.
They're online already?
Yeah, they've been online for same permit.
But it's not through Municity, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, geez, great.
I didn't think it had a public face.
No, it does now. It should.
Municity? Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
We've had people apply, so. Last time we talked with Renee, they had that online. It's on the.
It is online.
Yeah, you go to the place to enter the building permits there.
Right now, Linda's reaching out to try to get up their applications on that platform to just help spread it.
That's great.
Okay. Right. Why don't we go to WPCA?
Yeah.
Since we have
let's do that.
Roger here.
Roger is here. Thank you very much, Neil.
All right. WPCA is page 122 on the electronic package. For those in paper, it's after you go past insurance and benefits. Next would be WPCA. So it should be a few pages after community planning. One of the, you can look through the lines. There aren't a lot of significant changes. I'll let Roger go into the detail on that. But the one thing I do want to bring up is they're starting a study of the Collinsville area to determine where infiltration may be into the treatment plant. And it's a $300-some-thousand study, which currently is being funded by WPCA. It's going to lead to a lot of things that need to be fixed. You know, when they do everything from, you know, you put smoke in the pipes and all of a sudden you see the smoke coming out, everybody's, you know. Yeah, exactly. You can tell who's actually illegally hooked into the sewer system for their drain water and everything else.
That's actually how the study is done?
Part of it, yes. In fact, they did that part of it back. Did they do that back in the last phase one?
No, they did that back in the early 90s. They did some smoke testing in the Collinsville area, but for the life of us, we can't find any records of it. We have notes where they did it, but nothing.
No results.
Exactly.
What a waste.
So, well, unfortunate, but.
I also think 20 years later, you're probably going to have to redo it anyways, because people who were hooked in might not now be hooked in. Others who said, hey, this is convenient, might have hooked in. Possibly even including town hall. So we've, you know, and it really becomes apparent when you look at during the dry season, how much effluent's running through the plant. You know, you may be at 550,000 gallons.
During the dry season, we're down at 450,000.
450,000 gallons.
Okay. This past spring, early summer, we had a wet weather. We're pushing over a million gallons a day.
Wow.
Which is an indication of how much is infiltration. If it wasn't for that water getting into the, you know, the only reason it's going up is because rainwater is getting into the system. And so it really gives you an indication of the magnitude of the issue. It also has a significant impact on capacity. There was a time period there where they look over a rolling time period. If you're at a certain level, they'll say that essentially that's your capacity. And once you get over a certain capacity, then you have to start doing all kinds of planning, and you have to limit who's able to use the plant and those type of things. And so it really became an issue because we had no wet season for an extended period of time. So I think this study is critical, and you know, the one thing I just want to prepare you for is when they're done with the study, the work they may need to do, as indicated by the results of the study, may be significant, and it may be more than what WPCA is able to handle, you know, on their own. And so that at some point they may be coming back to the town with some assistance. And I've told the
what's the time frame
for if we were going to do repairs on the system, we're probably looking at about 2 years. Okay, right now the first phase is going to start in March. And let me back up a little bit. Back when they did the facilities plan in 2007, they televised the whole sewer system in town. So we have an idea where there are issues. And back in 2007, it specced out where the worst inflow and infiltration issues were, and Dowd Avenue was one of them. And that's when they decided to replace the line on Dowd Avenue, as well as eliminate the pump station at Canton Valley Circle. Okay, so that addressed a lot there. And so we have a couple of certain areas. So this first step they're going to do is start in March. They're going to be doing some flow monitoring, trying to narrow down in the Collinsville area exactly what streets are the worst, and is it the worst when it rains? Is it the worst when we have high water tables, that sort of thing. So we're going to do the flow monitoring first. There's going to be some televised work going back over the lines, because the last time they were TV was in 2007. So things have changed, the ground moves, et cetera. So that's the first part. Once they have it narrowed down to certain streets, then we'll probably go into the next phase, doing the smoke testing, knocking on doors and talking to the public, that sort of thing. And with the TV work, that'll be the initial part. And if we find smoke testing, then they may have to specialize in certain areas. Okay, and then they'll develop a plan on what it will cost to do it, whether sewer lines are replaced, whether they're relined, or just having people disconnect roof leaders. Okay.
And that's about 2 years to get all that work done.
About that. The first step is costing about $96,000 just to try and narrow down the streets and the flows coming in. Okay? And once we have that data, which right now, springtime coming, it's the best time to do it because that's when it seems to be the wettest. Okay? The best time to do the smoke testing is once it dries. So maybe during the summer that'll happen. It all depends on timing and weather and money and that sort of thing. Right now we have the monies to do I'll call it the scope of looking at everything, and then they'll develop a plan for repairs and we'll go from there.
So we could have an answer for what the repair is going to look like by the end of the summer.
That's a good question. I honestly can't answer that.
I guess it would be a little longer.
I would venture within the next 2 years we'll have a definite plan, because you can't develop a cost until you know how you can repair it. Okay. So if we're looking at two streets that need significant repairs, it might be cheaper to just replace the sewer line versus doing slip lining or sealing. It's hard to say.
So basically you find out where the problem is, the extent of the problem, and then you figure out a solution.
What's cost effective to
and then you attack it, you know, figure out your priorities and go at it that way.
Correct. Like when we did Dowd Avenue, we replaced it there was replaced from about Commerce Drive all the way up to the green. And there was a, we have a clean water fund loan with Connecticut Deep at 2%. And that was $1.3 million for that. And, but that was a replacement of the line. And also eliminating the pump station.
Are there any parcels in Collinsville proper that have a septic system?
I honestly don't know. I don't oversee septic systems, only the sewers.
Well,
and, but I'm not sure.
I don't think so. Usually you have to pay the connection with the sewer anyways, even if you have a septic.
Yeah, I mean, the sewer doesn't completely cover Collinsville, because I know when I lived on Torrington Avenue, the sewer stopped at Dunn Avenue, so everything, the upper part of Torrington Avenue, Country Lane, Freedom Drive, Erickson Drive, that was all on septic.
Correct.
So there's all, probably a lot of areas in Collinsville that the sewer never got extended that far.
But in downtown Collinsville itself, there are sewer lines throughout the streets, okay? Like, there's a proposal right now for splitting a lot, I think on 15 or 17 East Street. Okay, they talked about adding a couple homes there. So there are sewer stubs for that lot, but that lot's not connected.
Right, just out of curiosity, it's a little different question. Are there any lines, any sewer lines that, that go from houses into the Collins Company?
Not that I'm aware of. To the best of my knowledge, there is a pump station in the Collins factory property with a main line that goes out to Bridge Street, and all the Collins factory is tied into either that line or that pump station. But to the best of my knowledge, there are no private residents connected.
No Collins houses that were tied in?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Getting back to the issues, when you go out and identify like homes that are, have some pumps connected and other illegal connections and everything, when you identify those, do you think you can get voluntary compliance on some of those things just by sending the homeowner a letter and saying, you know, hey, we see that you're illegally discharging your sump pump into our sewer system?
It's about a 50-50 shot, yeah. Because
I'm just saying you're putting the burden on the homeowner or the actual violator, right, instead of having to fix the problem at our end.
That's correct.
And that will be the plan. It's, and that's one of the reasons why sometimes it gets a little controversial, and I'm sure you'll get some phone calls because, you know, these people have been dying in for years, and we're going to go out and tell them that, nope, you've got to, you know, you got to disconnect, and these are your different options, and these are what you can do. But at the end of the day, that part which is on that homeowner's property should be the responsibility of the homeowner to fix. And so, you know, I would anticipate when you move forward with execution of the plan, there will be some consternation.
The sewer districts that I've dealt with have been pretty ruthless.
Pretty what?
Pretty ruthless.
Now, Roger's not ruthless.
You also have to hire somebody to look. We'll see.
Well, yeah. That's why we have engineers. But, you know, Roger's not ruthless.
Roger's ruthless with a smile.
One
of the other questions though would be, as you plan to do these remediations, does this get tied into our road work? Because if we had planned to do a, we don't want to do a road and then tear it up again.
Correct. Good question. Right now, we really need to investigate what's going on. We know that if I got an inch of rain today, my flows would jump overnight 100,000 gallons. Okay? With that, the assumption is it's probably roof leaders. Because for sump pumps to get that much water, it's going to come up from the ground, where the roof leaders will be direct pipe it. Okay? So, again, we have the television videos from 2007, and we have seen some infiltration in there, here and there, but that could have gotten worse over time, it's hard to say.
When you look at those videos, it's interesting, because you can literally see the roots coming through the pipes, and there's times where you can see water coming through them, and, yeah, and it's, because I've looked at them, and it's it is interesting. I mean, you can see that some of those pipes are in pretty bad shape, and you know, I assume they're going to need some repairs. We do generally work with the utility companies before we do a road. For example, we'll contact Connecticut Water Company and see what roads they're looking to change their pipes in, and then we'll coordinate. And in some situations, we've actually saved a substantial amount of money. Upper Dyer, the Connecticut Water Company was changing those pipes. They were an old, almost like a clay pipe, and they kept breaking. It broke like three times over a two-year period. They replaced that pipe. When they replace it, they put a temporary patch on the road. George Wallace, when he was here, reached out to him and said, hey, you know, instead of putting that temporary patch on, why don't you give us the amount of money that that patch would have cost you, and then we'll just go ahead and redo the road, because the road had to be done redone anyways. Well, I don't know where they're coming up with their paving people, but they gave us enough money out of that patch to pave that whole section of the road. And so we literally went through and paved that whole section of road on the Connecticut Water Company's dime. So, and we've done that on a couple of different roads. So we'll check with the Connecticut Water Company to see what they're doing. And you know, the frustration that came out of, I think it was Torrington Ave, was that the one where they laid the water pipe in? And then they put a temporary patch on it, and it was horrible for years. And that's when I said, you know, this is crazy. You know, that's when we found out how much they're paying for this. Like, pay us, we'll release you from liability. We'll redo the road, and we're literally getting roads paved for the amount that they paid. I put a temporary patch in. Now we don't charge Roger the same thing, but you know, it's the same principle is the same. We try to coordinate with each other for working on roads.
And the other part, we're going
streetscape, I'd hate for us to put in all the sidewalks and everything, and then come through and have to do sewers on top of that.
It all depends on the timing. I mean, when we have the ability to move forward with streetscape, we've got to move forward with streetscape. We really can't delay too much. Although we have looked at, there's a large oil tank in front of Town Hall, and we've actually made plans that when we do streetscape to probably pull that out, because we're going to be tearing up the sidewalk anyways. So we might as well pull that tank out, because we're going to have to in 5-7 years, something along there anyway. So, you know, we are looking to coordinate utilities and other things at the same time we do it to the extent we can.
Roger, you were going to say something.
Yeah, one of the things we'll be looking at too is what's cost effective to remove the inflow and infiltration. Okay, what are we going to gain? If we have a leak of 5 gallons per minute and it's going to cost us $1 million to take care of that 5 gallons a minute, it's not fruitful to do that. So all this is going to go through the analysis once we start diving into it. Okay.
So you had said that when we get to the remediation part of this, that there were some things that the WPCA might not be able to cover, but the town would pick up. Were there specific types of things you were thinking?
No, I'm thinking purely dollars.
Okay.
That WPCA may not have enough money in their coffers. Okay. With the other capital projects that they have to fund, that, you know, don't be surprised if they come back here and ask us to assist in that endeavor. You know, there's other things they can look at. They can bond. There's other solutions, and we will certainly look at those things. But we need to realize, and we had this discussion when we're looking to lower the connection fees, that it's important that we lower the connection fees in order to help stimulate economic development. But with that, they might be bringing in less money. And that we need to recognize that at some point, if they're going to take on these larger capital projects, that we may need to assist them in that.
Would they bond or would the town bond?
They can bond on their own, especially if they have the clean water funds available. They're 2% bonds, which is a lower rate than we can get. So we would have them bond if that's necessary. But let's say it's only another $400,000 to get the project done. It may be more beneficial for us to take some out of fund balance and assist them with it than it would be to go out and bond. But those are all things we have to analyze, and we find out what the results of that study is. Is there anything else, Roger, in the budget other than...
I had a couple follow-up questions on the merit of here. Is that the two full-time NAGE people, they are currently part of the DPW union?
Correct.
They are.
Even though they're... Okay.
Yes.
Union, so it's that... Both those contracts are negotiated, that one contract?
It is one contract, correct.
Down into the telephone, there's a mention of the cost of the Verizon phone fiber optic project. I'm not fiber optic project. I had not heard of those.
And that actually should be dropping off for next year. I don't know if it's, you know, we can look at that. But when we were going over IT, I talked about the fiber and the five-year lease, and that was ending this spring. So that should be dropping off. That same fiber went to WPCA, so we charged WPCA for a portion of that cost. And so they paid a portion of that five-year lease, which will end this spring.
They may not need all of that.
They may not.
It's $24,000.
Yeah, remember, they're a special revenue.
$2,400.
Yeah, they, a little difference.
Little difference.
And remember, they are a special revenue fund.
Right.
So that if they don't spend it, it just goes back into their fund. It's not like it's a direct cost to the taxpayers.
And then under the Farmington use, under there, we have 56 connections that we send to Farmington?
Correct.
What happens is there are connections up in the Secret Lake area, okay?
Okay.
That flow by gravity to Avon sewer pipes, from Avon sewer pipes all the way to the Farmington treatment plant. So we have to pay Farmington to treat our sewage from there.
We recently did a capital project 2 years ago that brought some of that sewage back to our plant because we can process it cheaper than what it costs us to take it to Farmington.
So doesn't the homeowner pay for that, and regardless of how does that, that's really where I was going.
Okay.
Right? Why isn't Secret Lake people paying Farmington?
Because there is a Canton address, they have to pay Canton. So I collect sewer use fees from everybody in Canton, and then Farmington bills me for the treatment of that sewage, okay? We redirected some of the flow lab 2 years ago from the Secret Lake area, and we send it back to Canton and treat it. We also installed a flow meter down on Secret Lake, okay? So we know exactly what we're sending for flow through Avon's pipes to the Farmington plant. Right now, the agreement we have with the town of Farmington is calculated flow. So it's 56 homes times $315 per home. Okay, that's what our bill is, divided by four for quarterly. I think it's $4,500 a quarter. It's $18,000 a year. I rewrote the agreement, and it's been sitting in Farmington's hands now to change the agreement so we get billed based on flow, not on calculated flow. And we've determined that our flow is about half of what we're paying right now.
The other issue is town of Farmington's going through a huge upgrade in their WPCA plant.
Oh, yeah.
A very big one.
Yeah.
We have to pay a portion of that based on how much sewage we send them. So in theory, at least, we can make the argument that if we're sending them less flow, then we're going to pay for less of that upgrade, which is another reason to try to divert some back here.
Good. Thank you.
Are the sewage from the shops comes up here to camp?
Yes.
And does that require some pumping station?
There is a pumping station located at the shops that the town of Kent WPCA owns and maintains.
So if we sent effluent from Secret Lake to the Canton plant, we could use the pumping station at the shops or not?
We are using the pumping station through the shops, yes. And there is capacity at that pumping station and those sewer lines.
Because that's the other thing you have to consider. If you're diverting flow back over to the shop's pumping station and bringing it down that main line, that's also the main line that we're going to, any economic development that happens in an area will go through that same line. So you want to make sure that you reserve enough capacity in there to take on any additional economic development that may come in that area. So it's always a kind of a balance as to how much you put through there.
Are we, anticipating the development of the restaurant, the new restaurant at La Trattoria?
No one has approached me on that, and other than hearsay, I know nothing about it.
That's not online now?
The old La Trattoria is, yes, but I've been hearing different things that someone else bought it, they're talking about another restaurant, other developments, but that's all I've been getting is hearsay. Nothing's come across my desk in writing to review.
Bob, could you beg the board's indulgence? Could you take just 45 seconds and tell me about the oil tank that is buried in front of town hall?
Sure, absolutely. On the Market Street side of town hall, there's a large bricked out area. It's a sidewalk. It goes up to the steps that then go into town hall. In the ground there is a oil tank which provides oil to primarily right now just the Board of Ed. The Board of Ed, and I think it also provides it to our generator. That's it. At one time it did all of town hall. Since that time we've moved to gas because it's much more efficient, much less expensive. We monitor the tank. We have a, what's called a Vita-Root system on it. So we have it tested and it's all insured, but it is coming to the end of its life. That area we're looking to, we're going to put all new sidewalks in there as part of Streetscape 2. Well, I don't want to dig it up, brand new sidewalk, 4 or 5 years from now. And so if we have the opportunity to take it out, we figure we might as well take advantage of it then. So that's what we're looking at. It is a, I don't remember, is it a 1,000 or, I don't know, it's a large tank. It's larger than I'm comfortable leaving in the ground for an extended period of time. So I think we'll be, you know, we're looking at planning on trying to remove that as part of that project.
Thank you.
Can I ask one other question? In round numbers, how many Avon and Burlington customers do we have on our system? And the follow-up to that is, do they pay the same usage fees that a Canton customer would pay?
They do pay the same fees, okay? Burlington has 3 gravity lines, excuse me, Burlington has 11 gravity lines, and then they have a pump station that we monitor the flow, or they monitor the flow and report it to me monthly, okay? Avon, I think Avon has just over 100 residents that send flow.
The pump station in Burlington, that belongs to the town of Burlington.
That's
that doesn't
correct.
Belong to us.
Correct. Correct. But I get a monthly report from the public works director there with the flows that that station puts out, and they're billed annually for usage. But the same charges are Canton residents.
Okay. Any further questions?
One more, 20 seconds. How does the flow get across the river?
It's attached to the bridge, the Farmington River over here. There's a pipe attached to the bridge.
The bridge.
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So you're going to program for $187,000 addition to the fund, it looks like this year. Your revenue higher than your expenses.
Yes. And any extra money that comes in will be put away for capital repairs or capital projects.
Such as fixing the lines and
could be if we have enough to do that then. Things were dry over a number of years, so this I&I study was pushed off because we had other priorities. Okay. And now with the wet weather we had in spring, decided to move that up to the forefront and start tracking that now.
Great. Roger, I want to thank you very much for giving us a thorough review of the WCC. A lot of info and a lot of questions.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
My office door is always open, phone calls, emails, or if you want to tour the facility, anybody can stop down and give a tour. So a lot of people don't like to come down and say it smells a little bit. We open up for tours. So, thank you.
Bring my granddaughters down and see what they have.
Thanks, Ryder.
Okay. I think we have...
Do you want to do municipal insurance and employee
yes.
benefits? Okay. So if you go up above WPCA on electronic, it's page 117. For those in paper, it's probably about 5 pages above before WPCA. The first is municipal insurance. We use KERMA, which is predominantly the insurer for most of the towns in the state, if not 90-some percent of them. We are currently under a three-year rate lock agreement, which expires on June 30th, 2021. What it does is it caps any annual increase to no more than 3%, and it has at times been below 3%. There are a couple other advantages with using KERMA. Because the only entity that they represent is municipalities, they're used to working with municipalities, so if we have an issue, we have a claim, we just call KERMA directly. Prior to having KERMA, we also had an agent, and so if you wanted to do anything, you had to go to your agent. Your agent then would go to the insurer, get back to the agent would get back. Basically, we just got rid of the middleman, so we don't need them. We go directly to KERMA. We used to pay the agent $15,000 a year, so we've been able to alleviate that by going to KERMA. The other thing is we used to have other insurers, including one called Myrma, and they went under, and it cost the town an awful lot of money. So we get good stability, good service with KERMA, and we've been with them now for 7 or 8 years, I think. The other things under there is worker compensation. We do pay KERMA for our worker compensation insurance, and you can see what the result is there. Unemployment compensation, we self-fund for that, and if the issue comes up that we have an unemployment claim, we do pay that. We do from time to time have people that are, for one reason or another, leave employment and do seek unemployment. And then the last line, it's called rec expense, are funds that we set aside, so if we have to pay a deductible or an out-of-pocket claim, that would come out of there. So that's insurance. Any questions on the insurance? Hearing none.
Okay,
employee benefits. This is one that we spend an awful lot of money. The biggest increase as far as dollar values go is medical insurance. Our medical insurance right now is expected to go up 5%. We did put our insurance out the bid this year. We are self-insured, so the actual claims we pay ourselves out of a self-insurance fund. We've set money aside. But the claims are administered. We don't have the staff or the expertise or anything to administer. So the claims are administered by Anthem. And so we pay Anthem, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but we pay them a fee every year for administering this. We do put that service out to bid. We did put it out to bid this spring, and it came back, and Anthem was still the lowest, so we're still going to be with Anthem. A 5% increase historically is not bad. That's actually been one of our lower increases. We did have a meeting with Anthem and One Digital, who is our health insurance consultant. They did say it would be somewhere between 5 and 6, but they think because we've had some good history that we haven't been using all of our claims, or we haven't had as many anticipated claims, that they think we'll be at
5%. 5% for just the administrator, or 5%?
No, 5% overall.
Okay.
The whole fund. Yep. The other one on there, and we talked about this when I did the summary, was the pension. Based on the mortality tables that they've done and the study they did on municipal employees apparently are living much longer, and therefore, since our pension plan pays them till death, the DB plan, if they live longer, we have to pay them more. And yeah, you know, I mean, obviously they didn't do the study on CAOs or finance directors, but the other employees are apparently living much longer, and because of that, we have to pay more into the fund. And you might not think it would make that much of a difference, but out of the $100,000 increase we have to pay into the defined benefit plan, $73,000 as a result of the change in the mortality rate. So it did have an impact on the amount we have to contribute every year. And that plan's been closed since 2003, so any new employee that comes on has to go on the defined contribution plan or the DC plan. It's only those few employees that have been here for that long that are still in the DB plan and retirees that impact that fund. And so it's, you know, it was an unanticipated increase. And like I said, you know, on a $10 million budget or thereabouts, $100,000 is the 1% increase in the Board of Selectmen budget. So it does have an impact. Everything else in there.
Question?
Yep.
On our medical insurance, we're self-insured.
We are.
What happens if any particular year completely uses up the fund?
Yep, we have a, first off, we carry a certain amount of surplus in that fund, and it is funded to the amount that's recommended by our consultants. We also have what's called stop-loss insurance, so that if we go over, say, 120% of expected claims, then they will pay the amount thereafter. So we have both what they call aggregate stop-loss, which is the total amount. We also have individual stop-loss. So if any individual claim goes over $150,000, we have insurance to pay above that amount. In any given year, we may have four or five claims that go over that stop-loss. So we have additional insurance to cover extraordinary expenses.
So that individual stop-loss is what protects against the whole fund having to go
right
over and above.
Yep.
And who makes the determination the following year after the fund has had some stop-loss payments for it? Who makes the determination about adjusting the amount?
Yeah, well, we have a group called One Digital, who is our health insurance consultants, who gives us guidance on these things. They're the ones who actually put it out the bid. They make a recommendation to us to how much should go in there, and it's basically based on what our expected claims are. And they look at, you know, existing claims that we have, ongoing health issues of individuals and what impact that may have, and they'll give us a recommendation as to what the expected claims are. And then they'll say, and you should also have, let's say, I'm not sure what the exact numbers, but let's say 4 months worth of expected claims on top of that, and we'll make sure we have that sufficient funding in the fund. And again, every year, at least for the last decade, we have put in exactly what they've requested.
And that's all?
That's all in that number.
Here.
Yep.
That's all under medical insurance?
It is.
Like the consultant?
The consultant's under there, the stop loss, that's all under there. Yeah, we have put the stop loss out the bid separately. We did go with a correct consortium for it, and we ended up leaving them because it cost us more than it was to go back to Anthem. But we do competitively bid those different pieces of the health insurance.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions about this? All right, hearing none, what I would suggest we do is we adjourn this budget workshop so that we can have our regular meeting at 7. We will take up the additional topics, the capital improvement plan, the general fund revenues later on in the regular agenda.
So, and we're still waiting for the building official.
We went over his plan. We went over his department already.
Yeah. Neil covered for
him. Yep.
First time that's happened.
Inspections. Do I have a motion to adjourn this workshop?
I move that we adjourn this workshop.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right.